Welcome to Parents' Perspective. See you later, Mom, 15-year-old Talia called as she collected her backpack and several bundles and headed for the door. Wait a minute, her mom poked her head around the corner. What's all that stuff? Oh, Talia slung her backpack over her shoulder. That's my costume and props for the play rehearsal this afternoon. This afternoon? Talia's mom looked puzzled. I thought it was tonight. Nah, Talia shook her head. Now that we have an extended day schedule, all rehearsals are in the afternoon. Well, that's a relief, her mom held the door open for her daughter. Dad and I will look forward to seeing your face at the dinner table again. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about extending our children's school days? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has experience with an educational program that has incorporated the extended school day. Jessica Cunningham is KIPP DC's Chief Academic Officer. KIPP stands for Knowledge is Power Program, an organization of public charter schools. Jessica began with KIPP DC Public Charter Schools as a sixth grade teacher at the school system's founding school, Key Academy, about 8 years ago. She then founded Will Academy, KIPP DC's third middle school, and led the school as principal for 4 years. In her current position, she works with parents and community leaders, as well as serving as a mentor to KIPP school leadership. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Jessica.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
What's the biggest myth about extending the school day?
I think the biggest myth, Linda, is that extended school day is babysitting or daycare services. And it certainly isn't, especially not within KIPP. The extended school day model that we use is really about giving kids more time in math and reading and core content areas so they could be more competitive students.
That means they have a longer period of those subjects?
On average, KIPP students across the country spend about 40% more time in class. So they have more time in math and reading, more time to work and develop the skills that are going to make them successful students in college.
Why do you believe so many jurisdictions are considering this extended school day program?
I think most people in the country at this point can agree that, on average, our school systems are not preparing our kids for college, especially in under-resourced communities. And so I think that everybody at this point is very much kind of on the same page in terms of we must do something. And I think the extended day model is really appealing because it gives you a chance to kind of play catch-up with kids who are often 2 to 3 grade levels behind. I think some communities also like extended day because for them, it provides them with more opportunities for enrichment or extracurricular activities. It's a little bit different at KIPP DC. It's definitely intended to give us more time to spend on instruction. I think where everybody kind of falls on this issue is we've got to do more to support our students, period.
So this is a kind of model that could be used either for remedial kinds of stuff or for enrichment.
In KIPP, it's used to provide additional academic support. And so that's not always remediation because not all of our students are behind. Sometimes it can be to make sure that they remain competitive or to make sure they remain above grade level. And so it's basically used to make sure that they're competitive with some of the most affluent kids and competitive with kids who have traditionally been academically successful and competitive in the country.
So I need to understand a little bit better about what goes on in a classroom. If there's more of academic subject matter or more time for academic subject matter, does that mean children might have a class that's 60 minutes long instead of 40 or 45?
More like 90 minutes long instead of 60 minutes long. So, you know, the average KIPP math class, especially in 5th and 6th grade, would be 90 minutes long as opposed to in most traditional school districts, say a math class or a reading class would be about 60 minutes.
And attention continues.
Oh, absolutely. We find that if you attract the right talent in terms of really good teachers and really energetic and motivated teachers, and you provide those teachers with strong professional development and support, then it's absolutely not unthinkable to keep 9 and 10 and 12-year-olds on task for 90 minutes as opposed to 60 minutes.
How does that support non-traditional modes of teaching? In other words, in addition to the workbooks and all that kinds of stuff, what other kinds of teaching goes on in order to fill that much larger time block?
Well, I think it gives our teachers opportunities to be more creative in how they choose to reinforce skills and also spend more time teaching to the actual needs of the students in front of them. I don't know how often you all talk to teachers and principals, but differentiation is kind of, I think, a buzzword in most schools. And it basically is, differentiation is about making sure that you're addressing all the needs of the kids in your class. So kids that are slightly behind, as well as kids that are right on grade level, and kids that are above, like, how can you teach in a way, and how can you provide practice opportunities to kids in that classroom that speak to each kind of level so that no child feels left out or gets left behind or is bored. I think the extended day or the extended class time gives teachers a better opportunity to do that, to be creative in terms of how they're going to address those needs, but also be creative about how they're going to teach certain things. Can I not only teach this math skill by working out problems on the board, but can we also sing a song about it? Can I reinforce this math skill by also taking my kids outside? Let's look at the playground and discuss perimeter and area. So I think it gives them an opportunity to also be more creative. I think if you talk to most public school teachers, many of them, if not all of them, and I'm a former public school teacher myself, would say, well, if I just had 20 more minutes, if I just had more time to work on that with them, I think they could have gotten it today. And our teachers don't say that. They have the more time to make sure the kids got it today.
But there are specific periods of time assigned for different topics.
Absolutely. Beyond math and reading and social studies and science, our students get extracurricular activities that they would get in a traditional public school. And we have basketball teams and lacrosse teams and orchestra. We also have PE throughout the week. So they're getting, you know, the other things and recess for the younger students. So we make sure that what we're doing with students is also age appropriate.
How did the KIPP program originate?
Well, KIPP actually started in Houston, Texas. Two Teach for America Corps members, Dave Levin and Mike Feinberg, were teaching in Houston. They were teaching fifth grade. And they were actually at the time being mentored by a woman named Harriet Ball, who had been working in HISD, one of the public school districts in Houston, for years. They were in awe of how she was teaching. And so they were picking up all these skills from her and figuring out ways to really reach their students, because they admit that they were pretty bad teachers, as we all were at first, and kind of struggling to find their way. And so they had this woman who was teaching them really how to teach well. But then they also figured that they needed more time to teach well so that their students could be more successful. So they started kind of adding time to the day. They started like with an after-school program, and then, well, what if we bring our kids in on Saturday? And so it really had a pretty organic beginning, and they had a lot of success with the program in Houston. And Dave Levin is actually from New York, and he thought, well, we're doing this well in Houston. It seems to be working here. What if I go back to my hometown and do the same thing with students in the Bronx? And so he did, and it worked just as beautifully in the Bronx as it was working in Houston. And here we are 97 schools later. So we're at 99 schools in 20 states in the district right now, serving, I think, about 27,000 students nationally.
And it's all ages of schooling?
Right. So we started primarily as middle schools, and the bulk of our schools still are middle schools. We have 60 middle schools, but we have, over the past like 5 years or so, we've begun adding elementary schools as well as high schools. People ask all the time, you know, well, why middle? And I'd love to have a fancy and research-based answer. I think really two reasons. Number one, our founders were fifth grade teachers. And so, you know, we start with fifth grade. But also, if you do look at the research about what happens with students in urban environments and rural environments, fifth grade tends to be kind of the last stop before things can kind of turn really, really sour for kids in these communities, where if you don't get them caught up, if you don't do the remediation, if you don't get them into a really rigorous program with high expectations, unfortunately, either their fourth or fifth grade grades tend to be predictors of whether they're even going to graduate from high school. And so I think that's the other reason why we thought that if we start and grow these really strong and competitive middle schools, we can kind of make great strides nationally to close the achievement gap. But as time went on, I think one of the things that we realized, obviously, was that we're starting with fifth graders, you know, 9 and 10 year olds, and we're making great strides. Our fifth graders typically come to us 2 to 3 grade levels behind, and they leave us competitive with kids in the most affluent neighborhoods in the same cities and towns. So we can do that in 4 years, starting with 10-year-olds. Well, why don't we just start with 4 and 5 year olds? And maybe we can kind of eliminate the problem. Maybe we can stop the problem before it starts. And so that's kind of why we've kind of expanded to a pre-K through 12 model nationally.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on extending the school day.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Jessica Cunningham about extending the school day. How is this model different from just an extended school day if jurisdictions sort of tacked on some more hours in their day? What would be the difference?
KIPP is really different. I don't know if you know, but KIPP schools all adhere to five pillars, which I think kind of definitely distinguish them from a traditional school district or many other charter schools as well. And more time happens to be one of the pillars. In addition to focus on results, we believe that if you're teaching, then the kids should be learning and they should be able to demonstrate that they've been learning. The power to lead. We give our principals a ton of autonomy, much more so than what you would see in most traditional districts, as well as choice and commitment. KIPP schools are choice schools. They're open enrollment charter schools. So anybody can enroll in a KIPP school. There's no admissions test. It's really about, you know, parents and students making the choice and the commitment to, you know, stick with it and work really hard to make sure that their kids go to college.
So is there a real diversity among the school student group?
I think, yes, there is diversity. There's more academic diversity than ethnic diversity. So in D.C., you know, we serve over 2,000 students. 99% of them are African American. Over 80% of them qualify for free or reduced lunch, but they are academically diverse. So we have kids with special education needs and we have gifted kids. We have the full spectrum as far as academics. I will say that most of them, the gifted kids or the kids who are outperforming most other kids, are definitely in the minority. Most kids do come to us behind through no fault of their own. Not enough of them have received high quality instruction for the past, you know, 4 years that they were somewhere else.
Now, you mentioned special ed kids in the mix. Could you typically have a classroom with high-achieving kids and special ed kids in the same classroom?
Absolutely. And that's common in public school, period. You know, most public schools, including KIPP, run full inclusion models. When we were in school, definitely remember that it was pretty segregated in terms of academic performance. If you were a low-performing student or if you needed or required special education services, you had kind of a separate classroom. Fortunately, I remember some school districts or schools were even notorious for physically segregating those kids and putting them in the least savory part of the building even. Things have changed tremendously, and that's great, and they've changed all over the country. For KIPP, our special education students are in class with everybody else. We run an inclusion model, which means that the goal is to make sure those students are included in regular classes as much as possible. And so we have special education teachers that spend the majority of their time doing what we call push-in. So they're pushing into classes, general education classes, to support the special education students. And we do that way more so than we pull those students out of classes. We find that they learn better, and it's better for those kids, is to stay in class with everybody else as much as possible. And they also make more growth that way.
You know, it's interesting. When I was a young teacher late in the 1960s, there was busing from downtown Boston to the suburban area where I taught. And kids were bused to all different schools, picked up at dawn in the morning and brought home 12 hours later. And it seems to me, looking back at it, it even occurred to me at that time, but there were no such options, that this particular child in one of my classes would have benefited a whole lot more if his school day had been extended. He was a very good student. His day was extended. It was a 12-hour day, much of it spent on buses, riding around the city, picking up children, and then dropping them off in different suburban school systems. But he had, for example, at home, no newspapers, no magazines, and no television. So as an English teacher, I could not say, cut out an article on such and such a topic and we'll write about it tomorrow, because I had a child in my class who couldn't do that. We had to do those kinds of activities in the classroom. I'm not sure whether he would have needed an extended day academically or an opportunity to do something like play a musical instrument at the school or play a sport. Anything. He had no opportunity for that. He was typical of the kids who were bused, although probably academically at a higher level. And I'm wondering if he had been within his own community of children more like himself, and given an opportunity for an extended day, if that might not have been a better solution all those many years ago.
The extended day doesn't necessarily have to include more pedagogy. It just needs to include, sometimes for some kids, more of an environment so that it can be used to help the child do better academically.
In other ways. This particular child I'm thinking of went home to take care of the younger children in the family. I've forgotten the size of the family, but that was his job, and he made dinner because both parents were working. He did come from a two-parent family who was working very hard, but I know there were other options that would have been a whole lot better than busing him out to an affluent community. Jessica, what would you advocate for school systems considering extending their school days?
Plan. It's a lot. I think the danger if school districts don't do some extensive planning and research is that it will wind up being kind of more of a daycare, which is not really what kids need, especially in urban and rural communities where they're not performing as well. So I'd say definitely plan. They have to do the research about, you know, money. It costs more. And so I think they'd have to have lots of conversations with their local government officials about per pupil funding for all KIPP schools, really. We have to do independent fundraising, or we have to raise private dollars to meet that need for the extended day. So we can't run the extended day on the per pupil funds that we get from district government alone. It costs us, you know, about $1,000 per kid. We have over 2,000 students to run that day beyond 3:30. But we're willing to do it because we know that it works. And so I'd say plan. Also figure out how are you going to support this model financially.
How have the students in your program fared? Has there been long-term or short-term follow-up on the KIPP graduates of the program?
They've fared very well. So, you know, KIPP DC is the district's highest performing network of charter schools. Our students, after 4 years with us in middle school, leave our schools outperforming kids in the most affluent neighborhoods. So they're just as competitive as the students, the middle school students at Deal and Hardy, which, you know, are middle schools located in Ward 3, the most affluent part of the city. And, you know, our kids, most of them are coming from Ward 7 and 8.
The poorest wards
right,
of the city.
Exactly. So they've fared extremely well. KIPP is a college preparatory program. You know, our mission is to make sure that our students graduate from college. We've made great strides. They are, you know, 99% of our students graduate from high school, which is, you know, well above the national average, let alone the kind of the averages for low-income communities. They've done well. We're extremely proud of them. We still think we have a lot of work to do. Our oldest students are sophomores in college, so we're not at the college graduation point yet, but we're really excited about how they're going to do in the next couple of years.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on extending the school day.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Jessica Cunningham about the KIPP schools and extending the school day.
Does the program, when the kids are in high school, help them to choose appropriate colleges? Is there that kind of support for that?
Yes. So we, you know, we have our kind of how we're organized. We have our schools, and then we also have what we call KIPP through college, which is a complementary program that provides direct services and direct support to students once they leave us. So you're a KIPPster until you graduate from college. So if Jenny leaves us after eighth grade, she did extremely well. She goes on to St. Timothy's, a private school for girls in Maryland. So she attends St. Timothy's. She gets a KIPP through college counselor who supports her. She's not even at a KIPP school anymore, but we want to make sure that not only are her grades strong, but that she's adjusting socially. St. Timothy's is a different environment than a public school in Ward 8. And so making sure that she's making friends, that she's happy, and that she enjoys the school, as well as that she's doing well academically. And that person supports her for the entire time that she's at St. Timothy, advises her, you know, starting in junior year about what colleges do you want to go to, what kind of career do you want to have, and really just strong college advising. saying, you know, well, if you want to go to University of Maryland, here's the average SAT score. If you really want to go to UVA, let's look at their programs. Let's look at the average SAT score. Let's look at the average GPA and make sure that you're well on track to getting there. And then we stick with them when they're in college. I'm actually thinking of a particular student who went to St. Timothy's, and now she's at College Park, and she's doing very well.
What are some of the pitfalls of extended day programming?
Well, it definitely costs more. So I think that's one, you know, just dealing with the cost. And I think from a human resources standpoint, it can be more difficult to attract talent in terms of teachers. Most teachers are used to working a 7-hour day or maybe 8 hours, but a 10-hour day is very different. But what we find is that the best teachers out there are actually the ones who really believe that they need more time with their students. But it is an additional challenge, definitely, to find the teachers or the type of teachers that are invested enough and motivated enough to work that extended day.
For the KIPP program, does staff have to have the same kind of credentials as they do, for example, in a public school system?
It depends on the state. So in many states, absolutely. In some states, they have to have even more. So in the district, in all charter schools, teachers have to be what we call highly qualified to teach. DC public schools, teachers have to be certified. Certification is based upon, were you an education major in undergrad, and did you take the Praxis, either 1 or 2, which is kind of a teacher competency test that teachers have to take. To teach in a charter school, you have to actually, especially if you're teaching in a middle school or high school, you have to have majored in the subject you're teaching, which is actually a more rigorous standard than what you would need in DC public schools. So if you want to teach 8th grade math at KIPP in DC, you were either a math major or a science major who has a lot of math credits, or you have to pass the test that you would have to take to teach calculus. So you got to have some pretty strong math skills. So it just depends on the state or district.
If you were the parent of an elementary school student at this point in an environment where clearly something needed to be done, what would you be advocating?
If I was a parent of a student in an urban school, I would be advocating, obviously, for more time on task. We call it more time on task. I want my child to have additional time to learn reading and math skills and science and social studies. I'd be advocating for more field lessons. I want my child to, you know, we call it experiential learning. I want my child to have an opportunity to see the duck as well as read about the duck and write stories about the duck. I want her to know what a duck sounds like and what it actually looks like. I'd be advocating for better professional development for teachers in schools. I'd want to know that my child's teachers were top-notch professionals and kind of super bright people that were well-equipped to teach my kid and make them successful.
What about for middle schoolers? What would you be advocating?
The same exact thing. I think if I could do one more thing in middle school, I would want my child in middle school to have experiences, especially in reading or literacy courses and science courses, that were representative of what's going on in some of the best private schools in the country. More middle schools need to abandon more traditional reading basals and make sure that their kids are reading actual novels in class, because that's what you're going to find in a private school. You're going to find kids actually reading Lord of the Flies, not short stories, as well as lots of extracurriculars and team sports, we all know, and that's key to child development and definitely makes them much more competitive when it comes time to them to apply to college or various scholarships and programs.
What resources would you suggest for our listeners who will want to know more about some of the issues we've been discussing?
We have several. Facebook. We're on Facebook. You can definitely go to facebook.com/KIPPDC. You can go to the KIPP website, which is www.kipp.org. We also have a KIPP DC website, www.kippdc.org. Also, the National Center on Time and Learning. Their website is timeandlearning.org. They could also read Jay Matthews' book. Jay Matthews, former Washington Post reporter, Work Hard, Be Nice. I'm slightly biased, but I think it's a pretty great read. It's a book about the growth of KIPP.
Well, this has been a very informative time, and we are very grateful that Jessica Cunningham could be with us to explain the extended day programming and how it works in KIPP schools. So thank you so much for being with us, Jessica.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. Mention show number 467 and tell us if you can what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. Or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.